Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio.
The following wrestling broadcast is performed by highly trained professional athletes. It is not recommended that their actions be imitated in any form whatsoever in the home. This is the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour with your host, Frank Namoli, and wrestling's masked cowboy, the Maverick.
It's Friday night on one of the holiest Fridays or the weekends of the year, for wrestling fans, that is. It is WrestleMania weekend. And I am your host of the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour, Frank Namoli. And on the other end of the line, at the beautiful Lancaster Best Western Eden Resort, sitting poolside, relaxing and enjoying the life of a famous radio personality, the Maverick.
I don't think Howard Stern even was able to call in from a resort poolside. How, can you hear me? I hear a crazy echo.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
I'm feeling good. All right.
You got your Batman.
This is a first for me.
You got your Batman swim trunks on?
I do. I have my water wings, and I am sitting here being stared at like I'm a crazy person, but I'm loving it.
Well, if they start getting loud, you yell. I'm doing a radio show here.
Let me put some of them on the air. There's a wedding going on. There could be some craziness.
You should just go into the wedding and start asking their opinion on WrestleMania.
What do you think about WrestleMania, sir? On the street interviews with people in Lancaster.
So, well, did you know that there was big breaking news in the world of Totally Driven Entertainment today?
Big breaking news? What breaking news? I heard no breaking news. I was on the road all day.
Bay Ragney announced that there's going to be another wrestling show on the Totally Driven Network, and this one is going to be hosted by wrestling royalty. And he told me, but he made me promise that I couldn't tell anybody. So you know what's going to happen.
We're telling everybody.
Yeah, well, I'm stooging it off. I could care less.
Well, I mean, if he's bringing on another wrestling show, he's clearly trying to get rid of us. So we might as well just throw the baby out with the bathwater.
This is wrestling royalty. Wrestling royalty.
Oh, Harley Race?
No, even better.
King Booker. Ernie the Cat Lad from beyond.
Future WWF Hall of Famer from a wrestling family.
Okay.
Randy Mulkey.
Randy Mulkey is coming to Totally Driven Entertainment? I can't wait for that show.
I'm telling you. You heard it here first. I think Bay and Nick just had a stroke.
And we gave it away on the air? Mulkey Mania is coming to Totally Driven. Probably Friday nights at 10.
Do we want to talk about our contest tonight, too?
We're having a contest, and it's the best, biggest contest we've ever had because it's the first contest we ever had.
That's right. If you are the 147th caller on tonight's show, you are going to receive one of the coveted Bay Ragney meatball sandwiches, signed by Bay and Nick Wilkinson. What do you think of that?
That's huge. That's huge, because if you can get a meatball sandwich past Bay without him eating it, that is huge.
Have you seen those two? It's got to be huge. That's some heavyweight radio talent there. Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is our last show.
Yeah, well, we went off rails early. You were in the mood all day, so we knew we were going off the rails. But let's get back to the topic at hand, because this is no time to be goofing around on the air, man. It's here.
It happens.
The biggest.
How you doing?
Wrestling.
It doesn't matter how you're doing.
In the world was that?
That was actually not me.
It wasn't me.
That's actually funny. The Rock apparently just
the
jumped
Rock.
Onto
we
our...
got The Rock on our show.
It happens. How you doing? It doesn't matter how you're doing.
What are you doing over there?
No, legitimately, I am not doing anything.
Well, it isn't me. I'm sitting poolside. You're the one sitting by the board.
Well, the board's haunted then. Either that or Bay and Nick are finally listening in. Well, getting back to the topic, it is...
Oh, yeah!
All right.
We're
now,
being
now
frank.
It's getting annoying. Yeah, we are.
Whoever it is, get them off. Can't you control the board? You see who's on.
There's nobody on there. All right, if they don't stop, I will really tell who the host is. That's what I thought.
Yeah, April Fool's Day. Oh. Getting a little crazy.
There you go. Yeah, I actually don't know how you can control the board when, like, that's pretty weird. Anyway, WrestleMania weekend. It is the weekend that everyone waits for. Now, I got to get your opinion on something.
All right.
Everybody talks about WrestleMania.
Yes, sir.
But WrestleMania wasn't the first big super show.
No, sir.
Because two years before WrestleMania came Starrcade. Now,
Yeah, Starrcade came first, but the supercard, as it was, the wrestling supercard, goes all the way back to the early days of wrestling. Super events like that. But WrestleMania was the first one to fully and successfully integrate pop culture into the event. You know, they brought in the MTV, they had MTV on their side, they got a lot of national exposure by bringing in Mr. T, all the other celebrities came in and helped out, and they consciously set out to, like, go ahead.
And that was my question I was posing to you. Do you think that Vince and the WWF at the time looked at the success of those two Starrcades as supercards and said, you know what? Let's take the concept of this one big super duper show and just make it even better.
I don't know how much Starrcade had to do with it, but I think, I mean, like I said, the supercard went back, you know, they had, WWE had supercards, WWF had supercards, you know, when you look at Showdown at Shea, you know, predated all of that. And, you know, so the supercard wasn't new. I don't know that he necessarily was like, I want to have a Starrcade. I think he wanted to have a Super Bowl. He looked beyond wrestling, and that's what made WrestleMania different. He went beyond the wrestling world. All the other supercards were geared to wrestling. It was the biggest wrestling event of the year, whereas WrestleMania was the biggest event. It was the Oscars. It was the Super Bowl. It was all of that rolled into one. You know, they brought in celebrities and had MTV, and they were doing Saturday Night Live, and, you know, none of that had ever been done before, and it made the event stand out as a much bigger event. And, you know, it was easy to do in the early days of pay-per-view because there were a lot of pay-per-views, you know, especially wrestling ones. So, you know, while Starrcade may have been first, it certainly wasn't even close to the magnitude of a WrestleMania. And no, I'm not knocking Starrcade. Starrcade was a fantastic event.
Oh, no, I'm not either. I just found it curious that, you know, It was 2 years before, and they were really great shows, you know, the best of the best. And it just seemed to me like Vince said, you know what, that's good, but we can make it better.
Yeah, I don't think he looked at Starrcade like that. I think he looked at the overall concept. Starrcade may have had something to do with it, but when you look at, like, Showdown at Shea, the big event, all these different things that they had over the years, there was always the supercard. You know, Texas had a supercard for years and years and years. He wanted to go beyond. He wanted to have the super show. He wanted to have something bigger than anyone had ever had. He didn't want to have a Starrcade. He wanted to make Starrcade look like, you know, a house show in Poughkeepsie in comparison. I don't think he saw that as a success. I think he saw, I need to be in neon lights on Broadway, literally, and, you know, make it this huge, huge thing to solidify his plan for, you know, global world domination.
And I'll be honest, those first Starcades, man, he was spending money on the star power.
You mean WrestleMania? You're all hung up on Starcade for no reason tonight.
Sorry.
There is no Starcade.
I miss Starcade. I miss Dusty Rhodes. By the way, did you see the unveiling of that statue?
I did. That was pretty cool.
What did you think of the statue itself?
I, you know, some of their statues are kind of goofy looking, so it's kind of in line with the rest of them. I'm not a huge fan of any of their statues, but, you know.
You know what, though? That right there is why they need a physical Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
I really think they're missing the boat on that. Because I think that would be a great attraction because, you know, they induct all these people and it would really be nice, especially with the memorabilia they could probably get or have.
Right. Right, because, I mean, outside of WrestleMania access, I don't, and maybe mm-hmm. SummerSlam now has an access, I think, they don't pull it out. It sits in storage for most of the years. And that was one of the things. You remember WWE New York?
Yes.
That place was awesome because they had a physical place to put that stuff. You know, they had the Andre hand and the car, the front of the limo and stuff like that all sitting there.
Yeah, and Andre's boot, that thing was huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And having a steady place, and I don't know why they have it. They've been talk about it in New York. There's been talk about it now for a couple of years ago, moving down to Florida, where the facility where the Performance Center is. But they just hasn't pulled the trigger on it, and I think it's a crime. I mean, there's so much they could do with it.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it would generate a lot of money too. You know, and even a good PR move. Hey, you know, if they don't care about the money, they could always donate the proceeds to charity.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot they could do with it. But yeah, I mean, those early WrestleManias, though, getting to the event itself, they were, you know, WrestleMania 1 was so big and so over the top, and that was, you know, that was right around the time that I really, really got hooked on wrestling. I had been watching forever. You know, TBS Saturday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights was every week in my house. and we just even casually watching it and whatnot. But then right around Mania, when it went crazy, it seemed that everybody watched it all of a sudden. And, you know, WrestleMania 1 is when I really, really got sunk into the whole thing. I remember for the first couple of years, because it was only closed circuit at the time, it wasn't even pay-per-view, and there was no way my parents were taking me closed circuit. I would get up first thing in the morning and run down and get the newspaper and hope that they put the results on the newspaper or try to watch the news in the morning because they would cover it on the news. And that was the only time you heard about what happened. And, you know, especially with, like, WrestleMania 2 and 3, going into it when I was literally fearing for the life of Hulk Hogan in those two events, you know, and I needed to see if, you know, if Steamboat beat Savage. I found out through the newspaper, and it was that kind of feverish insanity.
Well, it's funny because I actually got to see 3 on a closed circuit at all places, DuPont Hospital in Delaware.
Really? How'd that work out?
Well, it was around the time of WrestleMania 3, and I was getting my my hip operated on, and this was a newer operation back then. I was actually one of the first people in the country to get what they called a sports hip put in, because I had a bone disease, and I was 17 at the time, so it was WrestleMania, and the check-in was Sunday. So, of course, I'm all bummed because, you know, I'm getting operated on Monday, and I'm sitting there. And the nurse comes in and goes, she's seen I have some wrestling magazines. And she goes, you like wrestling? I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And she goes, oh, yeah, well, we got the WrestleMania on tonight. And I'm like, bird? And she turned on a closed-circuit channel. Apparently, WWF was piping it in.
Right.
And all the kids at the hospital got to watch WrestleMania 3 live that night.
That's pretty cool.
It was. It was. And I'll be honest with you. I was with you. I was like, Andre's going to kill him. Because remember, up until that point, Andre always smoked Hogan.
Well, Andre, you know, Andre was the undefeated giant for 15 years. Legitimately the only time. And, you know, I remember being in the Spectrum a couple months before that match even got set up, when he was supposed to be wrestling Randy Savage. And they made the announcement that Andre wasn't going to make it. They're bringing in Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. This is a gimmick they did all across the country. They advertised Andre for a series of matches against different guys, and then he would mysteriously pull out at the last minute, and they would replace him. And they always replaced him with, you know, if it was Savage, he would replace him with Steamboat or something along that lines. It was the triumphant return of Ricky from the throat injury, and it was a big surprise. So people didn't get that upset that they missed out on Andre. But I remember being there and sitting there in the seats overhearing people talking, and they were talking about, well, yeah, did you hear what happened? Because apparently they had gone to the TV taping in advance, and they were talking about Andre's turns evil and wins the heavyweight championship. So I was like coming out of the building going, that can't be true. That can't be true. And then when it started to happen live on television, I was completely wigged out. So I legitimately feared for Hogan's life.
And, of course, you forget about the greatest match on that card.
It's not forgotten. It's on my list.
I'm not even going to say, because I know where the worst part is we're both sitting there knowing we know the match. And it's not the
forever.
Obvious one.
No, it is forever on my WrestleMania moment list, for sure. For the pure absurdity of it alone.
If you look back on the card itself and look back like on the stars they had there, it was definitely a fun, and I think that was the one that set it to took it to the next level, if you will. I think the Manias were great, but I think 3 just set them head and shoulders above the rest, because, you know, it was the Silver Dome and they sold it out.
Yeah, and they did. And it became, you know, it was such an epic. And to me, that's still, as many WrestleManias as there have been, as many, and there have been some really, really good ones, and there have been some really, really mediocre ones, and there have been a few awful ones. But the spectacle of it is always what, even if I'm not interested in WrestleMania the card, I'm interested in WrestleMania the event, the Hall of Fame, the remember they used to do the bagels and biceps and bacon brunch beforehand when they did a much smaller thing?
Yes.
And the marathon on the boardwalk from Atlantic City that Mr. Fuji won in a tuxedo by cheating?
Oh, man.
That's the kind of cool stuff that
It is. Do we want to take commercial breaks?
I guess we have to. It's 18 minutes in. That's pretty good for us. Usually it's like, all right. Hello, welcome to the show. Put the damn commercials on. Let's get to talking.
All right, we're going to put the damn commercials on, and then we're going to get back to talking. And remember, the 147th caller wins a prize tonight.
And Mike Ferreira, that means you cannot call and hang up 147 times, because I know you want the meatballs.
Especially when he hears it's signed by Bay and Nick. On that note,
attention sports fans, collectors, hobbyists, and autograph seekers. Are you looking for the best in sports cards and collectibles? The only name you need to know is Carl's. That's right, Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown, PA, not only has the best collection of sports memorabilia, cards, game, used merchandise, and autograph signings of top professional athletes, he also does custom framing, too. Go to carlscards.com or like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Carl's Cards. That's Carl's Cards and Collectibles, 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA. Remember, Carl's, the only and best name in sports cards and collectibles. For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things.
gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Trash City Beads, the great bead store with the weird name. Selling beads and findings for over 25 years. Visit us online at trashcity.com. Like us on Facebook at Trash City Beads. Unique beads, charms, crystals, and findings from all over the world at wholesale prices. No store, no showroom. We are online only. Visit us at trashcity.com. Trash City Beads is your online source for the best beads on the planet. Remember the name, Trash City Beads.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Wilkinson from TV Nation and Totally Driven Radio and Entertainment. Sadly, each year, approximately 3.6 million children become victims of child abuse. My latest ebook, Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, explores the long-lasting effects abuse can have on victims. Explore life after the abuse ends and how we cope with the tragedies of the past. Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect is available on Kindle for only 99 cents. And don't forget to check out my website, actingnotreacting.com, a common sense approach to teens in crisis. Let's work together and make this world a better place. And remember, stay driven.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromHolmes.
It's good to hear Wyndham Winthorpe III getting commercial work.
Well, he can't get any wrestling work after the thumping I gave him at the last show, so he might as well be doing voiceover work.
Letters from home. All right, we are back. And like I said, man, it's the granddaddy of them all, the big weekend. You know, and especially with the network, man, I'll tell you, since they got the network, they really stepped up WrestleMania week. They have all-day coverage on Sunday. They have the full Hall of Fame on tomorrow night. They have NXT on tonight. I mean, you're definitely getting your dose of wrestling. And I love being able to watch the full Hall of Fame.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the watching the edited version, you know you're always missing something. And, some of those speeches need to be able to cut loose.
You remember the first year that they actually had it on here, the greatest speech? I love my mama. I love my mama's bridge club.
Mr. T, he was awesome. But you have to give the man credit. He was a huge part of the first couple of WrestleManias, but his Hall of Fame speech, man, that was – did you see that they brought it back out on Mother's Day?
Yeah.
Did a goofy promo with it.
It's one of the greatest speeches ever. Man talking
well,
to the heart.
And honestly, they set themselves up because he said, they guess that you have as much time as you want, go out and talk about anything you want. So he went out and talked about his mama. Mr. G loves his mama.
And you know what's the greatest part about that? They let him talk as much as they want, and they cut the colognes down.
Well, that was actually the most loaded, I think, of all the inductees that year. I think they were the ones they were most worried about because, you know, Carlito was so obviously bitter and could not say anything nice forever that they thought he was really going to go off.
Yeah, yeah. Which I was actually, you know, you're surprised that they actually let him in.
Yeah.
To give the speech. But so let's get into it, man, because we got, you know, 30 years, man, we can go through.
That's
but
a lot of WrestleMania.
We're probably just going to focus on the first 20.
Possibly even fewer than that.
So let me hear one of your moments, my friend.
All right, my number five WrestleMania moment, and it's not because of anything other than I was in the building, was WrestleMania 15 out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And it was the one WrestleMania I got to go to live. And just to be able to say I was in the building at WrestleMania, it was such an electric atmosphere. All the excitement in the city leading up to it. The Daily News did a huge spread on it. They had a big party beforehand with everything. It was in the height of the Attitude Era, so everything was trumped up. And, you know, honestly, the Mania itself wasn't stellar, but it was just the fact that I was there. I could say I was there, and some clown actually had a Maverick sign, and I still don't know who it was. Nobody will stooge off who it was. But there was a dude with a Maverick sign in the crowd. I'm sure I know who it is because there's only about 10 people in the universe who know who I am. But no one's ever stooged off.
I actually know who that was.
You know who that was? For years I've been trying to find out.
I actually know who it was because they actually told me, and it was actually a wrestler.
Oh, I have no doubt. I have no doubt, but...
Do you want to know
sitting
who it was?
Of course, tell me.
Johnny Cashmere.
Really?
Yes.
Cashmere?
Yes.
Well, props to Johnny Cashmere. That's freaking hilarious that he's been able to keep that a secret for 15-some years now and got it over. Because I'm sitting there with the people. I went with a bunch of people, and someone's like, someone's got a Maverick sign out. And I'm like, ha, ha, ha. They're like, no, really, look. And I looked down, and sure enough, somebody had a Maverick sign in the crowd. It was Johnny Cashmere, huh?
Yeah.
That's freaking awesome. Good on him. He got one over.
That was when you could sneak in good signs.
Yeah. So, yep, WrestleMania. Were you at that one? Did you go?
No, I actually never attended. I actually rarely attended live matches after my... After I got into wrestling.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I think in all my years, the last one I attended was the last Piper's Pit with the Boogeyman.
Okay.
And that was the only reason I went, because it was a live Piper's Pit.
Right.
But, Yeah, that was great. You know, whenever they had it in Philadelphia, it was always great. You know, any pay-per-view.
Yeah, and they've had a bunch. They've had a bunch. And it's always, it really gets the rep of being an obnoxious crowd. And you saw that the other year with the Royal Rumble when they, you know, tried to hijack the show and came off looking like a bunch of a-holes. Because they did. They, you know, there was actually one of the biggest trending hashtags was F Philly. But they didn't just use the word F after the Royal Rumble. But, you know, you always knew what, I mean, I remember going to several pay-per-views and I never really knew what to expect. I remember one time we went to, I forget, was it Slamboree or Halloween Havoc? They had in the Civic Center and they toted out Johnny Gunn, Tom Zank, and maybe Brian Pillman. And they toted them out there against Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton and Michael Hayes or something like that. And it was like,
yes,
they literally ate the baby faces alive because here comes a Horseman, here comes a Midnight Express and a Freebird. And even Johnny Gunn even wore a Flyers jersey or an Eagles jersey to the ring and they still booed him. He couldn't even get cheap. It was brutal. So Philly's always been a wild crowd. Yeah, exactly. So Philly's always been a wild, wild crowd, and for Mania, you know, especially in the Attitude Era, when everything was at extra hype to begin with, and that was when Butterbean beat the tar out of Bart Gunn.
Yeah, where they actually thought that was going to be a competitive.
Right. Stop that
was
cold.
Ill-fated brawl for it all that didn't go at all the way they had hoped.
Right, because they set it up as a tough man thing to get Doc over. Steve
and
Williams.
Doc was the first one knocked out, yeah.
Right, and he got knocked out, and then Bart Gunn proceeds to kill everybody, and they looked like they were going to push him as the tough guy instead, and then, you know, he was just beaten within an inch of his life by Butterbean.
Nice, nice. Very good one. My number five, I love, my number five is, the reason I love it is because it was literally one of the first times I ever seen an audible. Because the match did not go the way the WWE thought it was going to go. And it wasn't that the match wasn't good. It's the crowd just made them change directions real quick. That was WrestleMania 18, Hulk Hogan and The Rock.
Oh, was that not one of the most amazing things you have ever seen in sports entertainment?
And now, you know what? If you go back and watch that, you need to stop and realize just how good The Rock was. He didn't let it faze him. He didn't get off his game. He ran with it. And that was when, at some point, you know, the WWF was watching the match, watching every action, and they called the audible at the end of that match.
Well, I don't know how close to the end of the match they made that audible, because in discussing that match in interviews afterwards, Hogan and Brock said they actually almost sent Hogan out in red and yellow that night because he would go to the autograph signings.
I didn't know
that. Access. He said he went to the autograph, and it's actually in his first book. I think he actually tells the tale. He flew home to Tampa from Canada to get the red and yellow gear because they were seriously considering.
One of his kids couldn't put in a FedEx box.
I think they were all there, but he tells
well,
the tale that they
it.
Were. Right, Knobs could have walked through. He would have to. They didn't want Knobs in the building. That's the problem. But they were seriously considering putting him in the red and yellow and saying that because everywhere he went, he had a huge baby face pop. So they weren't that unexpected. But The Rock was always great with that. He, you know, from Die Rocky Die straight up until when he had the crowd turned on him, and then he turns and, you know, he brought them back. And the genius of that match is they still managed to, even though the crowd was so pro-Hogan, they still, by the end of the match, they had, you know, they still gave Rock his props. It didn't ruin too much. Rock still was a big hero at the end of the match. And that could have been, you know, if they weren't able to bring that crowd around, that really would have messed up a lot of stuff for them.
And you know what was the funniest about that? That wasn't the main event, but you literally could have ended the show right there.
Oh, it was, yeah.
Do you remember the match that came after that?
Was it Trish? Was it the Divas?
Yes.
I think it was Lita and Jazz. Right. I remember Trish because I remember Trish going in an interview saying that she had to follow that, and it was just like, we just got no chance. They could have went out there naked, covered in baby oil, and nobody would have cared.
And then the main event was Triple H and Jericho.
And that was not a very good match either.
No.
The booking was all weird.
It was because because I knew that was the whole supposedly the NWO taking over, but I know Nash didn't wrestle for some reason. Was he hurt? Do you remember?
I don't remember. Not at that point. He hadn't been hurt.
Because I know Hall took on Austin.
Right.
And I thought Nash was supposed to wrestle somebody, and he didn't.
There was talk of Nash was supposed to beat him, but whoever it was, whether it was another, I don't know who it was, but he just ended up not happening for whatever reason. But it wasn't necessarily the NWO that screwed up that angle. It was the booking of that angle. Do you remember they made the champion, Jericho, look like he was completely an outclass clown from the start. Like, he won the belt,
yes.
And he was cleaning up Stephanie's dog's poop. And, you know, he was booked really weak, and Triple H was booked as a monster. Like, he came back from the thing, and nobody could move him. Nobody could bump him. He just destroyed everybody and everything in his path. And it really was dumb booking because they went into the match going, there's no chance that Jericho's going to win this, but he's the champion. And, you know, it was just really just lopsided, the whole thing. Triple H just mowed over him, and they made him look like an ass clown. And it didn't help either guy, really.
Oh, man. So, but that, again, that was my number five because I just thought it was one of the best, most well done matches, and it'll always stand out as one of the greatest for me. So what's next on your agenda, sir?
Next on my agenda, and this was another one. I love when we have lists where I have to sit and debate for days. And even like I top five, it's not even necessarily in a top five order for me. You know, my number four, and I'm just gonna get it out of the way. I'm gonna say one of my favorite all time, my favorite WrestleMania, bar none. I started to say it earlier. WrestleMania 3 for so many different reasons. But one of the main reasons it's my favorite is got to be the – I can't even call it – is it a mixed tag match? But it was Hillbilly Jim. Haiti Kid and Little Beaver versus Little Tokyo. What's this?
The last guy, who was the last one you said before Little Tokyo?
Little Beaver.
Sorry, I'm a child.
And King Kong Bundy versus Hillbilly Jim, the Haiti Kid. It was Lord Littlebrook. Now you got me all you got me all confused. Which one? Who did I say? Lord Littlebrook. The King Kong Bundy and who was the other one?
Haiti Kid and then Little Beaver with Hillbilly. I mean, Haiti Kid and was it Little Tokyo?
Yes, Little Tokyo. I said them earlier. Yeah,
Little Tokyo and Lord Littlebrook were Bundy's partners,
and Haiti and
Beaver
were Hillbilly Jims.
Yes,
and that was the first real absurd WrestleMania match, I think. I mean, 1 and 2, you had the football players in the Battle Royal, but it was taken dead seriously. You had a bunch of squash matches, but this was one of the first, and there had been others. matches similar where just bizarre matches happen. But this one was the first, and it honestly, it's one of my favorites. It's one of the craziest moments. When you look at King Kong Bundy and his WrestleMania arc in those first couple years, you know, he, WrestleMania 1, he squashes SD Jones in seconds to establish himself as a monster. And then he goes into WrestleMania 2 and almost dethrones Hulk Hogan, breaks his ribs, and has an epic steel cage match. And then WrestleMania 3, he's teaming up with two midgets against Hillbilly Jim and two midgets. And the Hillbilly Jim King Kong Bundy feud was one that had been going on for a long time. Hillbilly was one of those guys, along with Andre and Hogan, who battled Stud and Bundy all the time. And just to take a left turn because they suddenly decided they needed midgets at WrestleMania.
That is. That is one of the greatest. That's just one of them ones you'll remember for forever. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, it's not necessarily my number four, but I got to mention there was another mixed tag match that happened a few years later. Actually, probably about 4 or 5 years later. But I always remember it because it was one of the most absurd, another absurd match. And that was the late, great Dusty Rhodes and Sweet Sapphire against Randy Savage and Queen Sherry. Which was funny for one reason and one reason. Here you had Dusty and Sapphire, who are far from in shape, and Savage and Sherry, and you're just like, there's no way this is going to end pretty. That was one of my favorites. Now, of course, you know, you want to get into epic moments in WrestleMania. I guess my number four was one. The match may not have been the greatest, but the build up was unbelievable.
Okay.
And that was Warrior and Hogan.
You know what? Don't knock that match though.
Well, you know what? It was. You know, it'll never go down as one of the greatest technical, but for pure excitement and build up. Because they did something that they rarely did, and that was they kept them both faces. They didn't turn one. They didn't, like, you know, you were expecting a big Warrior or Hogan turn, and it didn't happen. And you legitimately didn't know who was gonna walk out with the belts.
Yeah, absolutely. It was such the build that we talked about this, I think, at the Royal Rumble show even, which is, you know, when it started. It was so different and something absolutely that had never been seen before in the WWE. Very rarely had been seen before. You had these two huge baby faces and, you know, they went at it and, you know, they both stayed baby faces, and it was really a back and forth as to who was, and one was the WWF champion, one was the Intercontinental champion, and you know, it was a once in a lifetime match. And Warrior was so hot at the time, but Hogan was still Hogan. You never really thought, you know, Hogan was going to be bested, especially clean, and you ran down the technical basis of the match. But let me tell you, if you really know wrestling, that was a, you know, and I'm not talking about spot monkey wrestling where they're holding counter hold, but as far as telling the story, they did a hell of a job to convey that kind of story where they passed the torch, but Hogan still was strong enough coming out of it.
I agree with you 100% on that.
And I think it was one of the better matches it, as far as, you know, WrestleMania match, main events goes, where, you know, the crowd was on their feet the whole time, and they were chanting for Warrior and Hogan, and then especially for Ultimate Warrior match, it may have been his best match, with the exception of maybe the Randy Savage one a couple of years later. So, you know, I don't take anything away from that match, and I give both men credit, and, you know, especially Hogan credit, because Hogan was never known for being a ring general, or at least he was never given credit for being a ring general, but to get that kind of performance out of the Ultimate Warrior, who up until that point had been doing these short little squash matches, and none of them were very good. So...
How many
Ultimate Warrior, count how many good Ultimate Warrior matches you can count on one hand. I can think of two that I would say were good matches.
I don't know if it was a good match, but Andre giving him the boot out of nowhere.
Well, see, did you see that, or are you just to telling the story that Heenan loves to tell because it was hilarious? I never saw that match, but I love
Heenan telling the story. The Rise and Fall of the Ultimate Warrior. And Warrior ran, he came across, and being in wrestling, you will be able to pick it up that he did not know that boot was coming up. Because he was coming in for a clothesline. He had his arm extended, and Andre just put that thing right in his face. And I have tried to slow it down to see if he leaned over and said what Heenan said, and it's kind of hard to tell.
Right.
My man went back, and you seen almost the eyes roll into the back of his head. But, oh, man, he's learning.
He's learning. But, I mean, I can count. I mean, as far as that I can think of, and I might be missing one or two, but I say Savage and Hogan were the only, and I'm only talking about the first Hogan match.
Yeah.
Savage and Hogan were the only two guys I've ever seen get a decent match out of the, what I would call a decent match out of the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
You know, Rick Rude and him had a couple okay matches, but I don't know that I would call them great matches.
No, I agree with you 100%. All right. So what's next on your list?
What do I got here? See, I don't have my notes in front of me, so I'm running from memory tonight, so I'm a little scattered. So I'll just jump to the next one that comes to mind. And this one was actually a... No problem. The next one was actually an honorable mention for me.
Did you tell him you're doing a radio show?
He doesn't know he was just on the radio. He just thought he was locked out of the hotel because I moved over. I'm in the stairwell now because the pool is closed. WrestleMania X8. And I mention it simply because it was one of the most creative and, you know, partially goofy matches on the entire card. But I'm talking about, and this is the only time, and as far as WrestleMania memories go, you know, we're playing kind of fun with the list here. I'm not saying this is one of the best WrestleMania matches ever, but when I was trying to think of crazy WrestleMania moments, and that's kind of what I always do with my list, this one came to mind because it was hilarious to me. Maven versus Goldust for the Hardcore Championship. Now, you don't remember that match, but when I start telling you the story, you're going to remember it, and I had to look because I honestly didn't know who started that match. But it was Maven and Goldust for the Hardcore Championship, and Spike Dudley ran into the ring in the middle of it and pinned Maven for the belt. And then as he was running backstage, Hurricane came flying out of nowhere, swinging on a rope, and knocked him down and pinned him for the Hardcore Championship. And then Mighty Molly turned on the Hurricane. Do you remember this?
Yes, I actually do.
That it actually went through the course of WrestleMania where they had the title change numerous times until Maven won it and drove out of the building in a taxi cab. I think Christian was involved, and just everybody backstage. Al Snow, I think, got involved at one point.
I remember this.
How bad is that? And like I said, it's on the list of WrestleMania things. It was always something that made me laugh that night. The Hardcore Championship, 24/7. It was a blessing and a curse at the same time. And at WrestleMania, they really made it that particular year because, you know, when you think about it, it's like Maven and Goldust in a hardcore match. What are you going to do with that? Well, of course you're going to turn it into a three-ring circus. And it was just one of those funny, when I was going through the mountains of WrestleMania footage, and I came across a highlight of that, and I went, oh my gosh, I have to throw that in there as an honorable mention because it was just absolutely hysterical.
That's awesome. That 24/7 hardcore belt was one of the funnest belts ever.
Yeah, it really was. They did some really, really crazy. And towards the end, it got a little stale. And I understand them having to try to turn it back around. But when they did that, it died. But the 24/7 rule was absolutely awesome. And they did a lot of goofy. It was a nice way to lighten up things on the card.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Crash Holly, afraid to go to sleep at night because he was afraid people were going to come into his hotel room and attack him. And
right.
A referee, I think, tried to pin him once.
Uh-huh. Ivory did. He was giving him a rub down and smashed him in the head with a vase.
Oh, man.
So, I mean,
that's a good one. I like it. Now my next, and it's a twofold. One for one good reason and one for one of the not so good reasons. And that was WrestleMania 14.
14, okay.
Because if you remember, the main event was Steve Austin versus Shawn Michaels and McMahon pulling off the biggest coup with getting Mike Tyson as a special guest referee.
Right. The beginning of the Austin era officially. It's when he finally overcame.
Yes. And again, getting Tyson got them press on literally everything.
Oh, yeah.
There was not one thing that wasn't covered. And especially with the way Tyson got involved, where he looked like he joined DX and given the crotch chop, and then him ended up knocking out Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. Right, at the end of the match, sure.
So that was one of my moments. And then the other one was probably one of the weirdest, most convoluted things. If you remember at that time, WWF had an abundance, and I mean a plethora of tag teams.
Yes.
And that was the famous tag team battle royal.
Oh.
Where if
yes.
you got eliminated, your partner had to leave too.
Right.
But do you remember what the, I guess, weird thing that happened in that battle royal was?
No, not off the top of my head.
Remember the Truth Commission?
Yes.
Where Kurgan mistakenly eliminated his own partner?
Oh, yeah.
And everybody was just like, huh? And he
what
was like, he grabbed somebody, and I guess he thought, and remember, he was a big dude.
Yeah.
And he literally launched his own partner over the rope, and everybody was just like, "Did he just eliminate it?" And he just looked like
own partner.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go be an oddity now because I just killed my gimmick.
And then, of course, it was also famous for having one of the greatest tag teams in the history of wrestling in one of their very few appearances.
Oh?
You know what that was? The New Midnight Express.
Bombastic Bob
and Bodacious Bart.
Yes. Good Lord, was that a disaster. And I liked both of those guys, but boy, was that a disaster. That whole storyline was a nightmare when they were trying to do the NWA invasion and nobody cared and it was relegated to like
840. Yes, because the Rock and Roll Express was also in the Battle Royal.
Right. Oh, wow. Yeah, that was awful.
So, So while 14 had some highlights, it definitely had some lowlights.
Yeah, I'd almost forgotten about that tag team battle royal mess. And that's the thing, some of these moments rise so high, like the Mike Tyson thing, and it dominates your memory of that whole show. And then it kind of blurs over some of the more. And there are some awful.
Yeah.
What's this?
But it also shows you, like, how wrestling has changed. They had 15 teams in the WWF at that time. 15 different tags. And they weren't throwing together tag teams.
No, this was in the middle of it, right. This is when they were doing the factions, too. The factions were big.
Yes.
So that helps.
Yeah, because you had the Barriquas, you had the Vipers, the Nation of Domination, the Quebecers, the Headbangers, Too Cool, the Godwins, the Midnight Express, LOD 2000,
yeah,
which basically was LOD original, but they just added
with Sonny. They just
cool.
Yeah. Well, they gave them kind of a pseudo new look, like Hawk grew his hair out, and they got biker helmets to go with their
headbands. Now I remember.
And Sonny came out with them like one time. Sonny came; she was going to be their manager to lead them back to greatness. She came out in this really ridiculous showgirl outfit, and this is when she actually looked good, and then disappeared again. Like she must have pissed them off so bad that they sent her packing quick.
Oh man. So that was my next moment. So what do we got on the agenda for you?
My next one, and this one always intrigued me, not because it was a great WrestleMania, but because it was what I refer to as the transitional WrestleMania. And that's WrestleMania 10.
Okay.
Because... And this one always stands out to me because it was the first WrestleMania to me, and even though it was 10, it should have been so big and it should have been so epic. But to me, it was a left turn because it was such a different kind of WrestleMania. You know, you started off with Owen and Brett, and you had an amazing scientific match. You had the ladder match and, you know, the Yokozuna-Luger-Bret Hart situation, and... It was the first WrestleMania to me where they had to kind of pull back because they had lost so much star power. And I think Savage was still on the card. Savage and Crush, I think, were still on the card.
Yes,
Savage, but he was a part-timer at that point. But it was the first WrestleMania to me, and even though it should have been this, you know, it's 10 years in, it should have been a huge spectacle, it was actually much more reserved and more one of the first. And I don't want to call it wrestling WrestleManias, but as far as WrestleManias go, it was the most wrestling-centric WrestleMania. Like, they didn't have Hogan. It was the first one without Hogan. And therefore, it was the first one without the spectacle of Hogan. Like, and I remember thinking, something just doesn't seem the same with this WrestleMania. And I'm not saying it was a bad WrestleMania. There was some great WrestleMania stuff that came out of it. Except for, of course, that 10-man match, which I was making a joke about. I forget, I don't know if we made it with you or Normie during the course of the week. The legendary WrestleMania 10 10-man match that never happened.
But to me,
it was like IRS and Tatanka and like a bunch of guys and 123 Kid. It was just a thrown-together 10-man anniversary match, and it ended up having it the next day on Raw. Because they ran out of time, or they ended up not booking it, but it was a thrown together match, and it looked awful on paper, and I think they realized that it just shouldn't have been on WrestleMania. But you know, it was to me a standout WrestleMania because it was the first, you know, WrestleMania that it always stuck out to me as one of the more interesting ones because you know you had Bret and Yokozuna with the weird finish, which I honestly think.
Mm-hmm.
Buried Yokozuna's push that they made him look like an idiot like that with them shaking the ropes and him falling down and that being the end of the Mighty after destroying everybody he slips and falls and dies. And
yeah.
You know
can't
what I
really
mean
argue
and,
that.
And you know Lex Luger and Kurt Hennig came back and turned on Lex Luger it was to me, and of course the ladder match, which when you talk WrestleMania 10, the ladder match really should be the only conversation other than Bret and Owen, because that, you know, set the standards so high.
Oh, like you said, man, that was Bret and Owen. What could have been? Well, that'll bring me to my next WrestleMania.
All right.
WrestleMania 23.
23, all right.
And I'll tell you, this was another one where the actual attraction wasn't the wrestling. That was the infamous Donald Trump McMahon.
Oh.
Where you had a very unproven Bobby Lashley against a basically
Umaga.
Newly on the scene Umaga with Armando Alejandro Estrada.
Who was a great,
turned out
great
to be
mouthpiece.
One of the greatest workers I ever saw. Then he opened a lemonade stand, which I found hysterical.
Interesting.
But that was another one that basically showed that McMahon knew how to market, because that was getting such – you had people, well, who are you, Team Trump or Team McMahon?
Right. And that was another – when you think about it, you know, essentially that was a mid-card match. That wasn't a high-profile match. If you just put Bobby – and I'm not saying it was a bad setup, but Lashley and Umaga were both two big boys, and it was a hard-hitting match. But adding Trump and McMahon to that just made it this huge spectacle. And really, it got a lot of major news because Trump was involved. And, you know, just seeing Trump out there acting, you know, he's a much better wrestling manager than he is a presidential candidate, for sure, because he's – that's so polarizing.
Well, if you looked at that entire card, from basically top to bottom, with the exception of the main event, which was Cena and Michaels, it was
right.
A mid-carder show. It was a mid-carder's dream show. Because, real quick, I'll give you a rundown and tell me which one of these matches impresses you. You started off the show with Ric Flair and Carlito defeating Gregory Helms and Chavo Guerrero.
You know, that just popped up somewhere.
Oh, really?
I forget where I was watching. And they talked about, and I had a hard time remembering that match even happened. Like, I'm like, did this really happen? Or is this like a joke? It may have been the Edge and Christian show talking about it. But it was really, really an absurd match to have.
And the next one is even more absurd. Mr. Kennedy in, I guess what was a five-way dance, it was the Money in the Bank match.
Okay.
It was Mr. Kennedy, CM Punk, Randy Orton, Finley, Matt Hardy, King Booker, Jeff Hardy, and Edge.
That was a weird roster. Some of those Money in the Bank matches, though, some of the guys they threw, remember the year they threw Flair in there? They didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, it became a dumping ground for guys who we have to get on the card and don't know what to do with.
And that's basically. Match number three, Great Khali versus Kane. We're not even going to talk about it.
Let's ignore that.
Four, Chris Benoit versus Montel Vontavious Porter, or MVP.
Oh. Okay.
Five, Undertaker versus Batista.
Ooh.
Oh, six, talk about crap on a stick. ECW Originals, Rob Van Dam, Tommy Dreamer, Sabu, and the Sandman took on the ECW New Breed of Elijah Burke, Marcus Corvon, Matt Stryker, and Kevin Thorne.
Wow, that is a pile of crap.
And then you had the Trump and Lashley against McMahon and Umaga, Melina versus Ashley, and then the main event. So, like I said, if you go down the entire show, it was basically
it was a two-match show, because Cena and Michaels
was
good.
And that wasn't even the draw. No one could care less about that match at that time.
Right.
So
right, because
you basically had McMahon and Trump as the attractions.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the one thing that Vince is and the WWF is really good at is even there have been like WrestleMania 13 was another, I don't remember the exact card, but I remember WrestleMania 13 looking at it and going, this is not a WrestleMania card. And a lot of people are saying that about this year because they've had so many injuries and so many people out and the just huge booking errors. Like I'm looking at this card and I'm thinking there are some serious, serious booking errors all over this mess. And, you know, but it's still the spectacle of it. It's still going to be huge. And I still believe that Vince has got some things up his sleeve that are going to make this, you know, at least maybe not a disaster. Maybe not a disaster, mm-hmm. but it's still going to be a decent, fun night.
I was just about to say that. Mark my words that at some point there is going to be there's going to be a big surprise.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure there's going to be something big. Someone's going to show up. There's going to be a surprise. There's going to be some kind of huge thing, because there always is. And, you know, I have ideas of what I would do. I don't know what he's got ideas, but there's things looking at it, I'm like, why are you doing this when you could have done this? And you've already been leading towards that. There's a lot of weird stuff this year. But at the same time, I've learned to sit back and let Vince be Vince and let the WWE, because – you know, they got dealt a rough hand this year. They built Rollins for a year, and he went down. You know, Cena is their main deliverance, their delivery guy, and he went down. And, you know, guy after guy after guy goes down, and it really messes with your media plans. I mean, imagine if the rumored WrestleMania match just had happened. It would have been a very, very different show. If you had gotten, Cena Undertaker would have been, the build-up would have been awesome. I don't know how they would have built it up. But it would have been awesome. And Brock Lesnar and Bray Wyatt, I still think they dropped the ball on. As much as I love Dean Ambrose, I would have loved to have seen the build-up with that.
Well, don't forget, too, you got a lot of X-Factors out there. So I honestly am expecting something special to go on.
Is Bray Wyatt on the show?
You know what? I'm not 100% sure.
I don't think the Wyatt family, unless they're in the Andre Battle Royal, is on the show.
Which they probably will be, and I guarantee that'll be the breakout for Braun Strowman if they are.
Yeah, I would have to put him as the favorite for that if he was going to be in it. Or at least he tosses everybody and gives it to Bray.
All right. So what is at the top of your list?
Are we at number one already?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, if I had to pick my all-time favorite, I've said it multiple times. My number two, I think I threw an honorable mention in with number two, but my number two would have actually been WrestleMania 1, the one that started it all. But my favorite all-time WrestleMania to this day, and it's still the biggest to me WrestleMania, looking at it, and it's WrestleMania 3. And I know I talked about the Hillbilly Jim match and stuff, and that was a great WrestleMania moment. But if I had to pick the all-time greatest WrestleMania, it's 3. Hogan, Andre, nothing has ever come close to the magnitude of Hogan, Andre. The build-up, the intensity, the 15 years. And even I'm not talking about the match itself, because the match, regardless of revisionist history, it doesn't matter how good the other matches on that show were. The only match that Andre Hogan sold all those tickets. Now everybody goes, I was only there for the Ricky Steamboat. Now, that was a great match. It was probably my favorite WrestleMania match.
And no one went there for that match. I don't care who says that. No one went there for that match.
No. And it's become popular because it's like one of the best wrestling matches in all of WrestleMania. That everyone now is so cool they can't. No, I went because I only cared about WrestleMania 3 because I cared about it. It's not true. You're a liar. Everybody in the universe was talking Hogan Andre.
Exactly.
And you know it never before had you'd seen, and you've seen other big attractions go at it like that, but never to that. To that extent, Hogan was so big. Andre had 15 years, you know, and the build up for it, you know, from leading into it, it really, I mean, 15 years worth of build up for this epic, epic match. And it was one of the times where you really thought, and Hogan was good at conveying that he was in trouble. You know, the year before with Bundy, you really worried about was he going to be able to get over Bundy and the injury, but Toppling the Giant.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was a magical moment.
Yeah, and there was a lot of craziness on that card. It was a decent card all around. I mean, there wasn't too many stellar standout matches, but, you know, you had some really good stuff happening. And some lackluster stuff. There was a lot of the early WrestleManias I looked at, looking back, there was a lot of thrown on there matches that, you know, especially like your fours and five and six.
Yes.
Where you had like 15, 16 matches and they were all kind of unimportant.
Well, Mav.
Yes, sir.
It wouldn't be a WrestleMania if we didn't have a caller.
Oh, we have a caller. He gets a meatball sandwich because he.
Who do we have? Well, it's funny that you mentioned the meatball sandwich.
Uh-oh.
We got our friend from Pro Wrestling Now on.
Well, he should be calling on the WrestleMania show.
That's right. We allowed him to call for the WrestleMania show. Mike Ferreira, you are live on the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour, my friend.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, I had to call your show for the WrestleMania. You know, I haven't been calling because I've been sketching myself back and giving everybody else a chance to talk wrestling. But, you know, it is WrestleMania, and I got to tell you, I'm pumped up for WrestleMania. And how about, let's talk about WrestleMania 7. There was a plan that never happened. It was supposed to be Hulk Hogan in the main event versus Toto the Sheik.
I heard that. I just not too long ago heard that crazy rumor that Tugboat was going to be in that role.
Really? Now this is something that's new to me, this story, so you guys can enlighten me.
Go and you can check that out on Woo Nation with Ric Flair. He had on the episode on his podcast is with Bruce Pritchard, and Bruce Pritchard talks about them wanting to turn Tugboat and make him the Sheik.
Yeah, I read the recap of that. I didn't actually get to listen to that show yet because I just started listening through the Nature Boy podcast, and I just had heard it, and I read that, and I'm like, that's got to be a rib. But yeah, they were originally going to turn Tugboat and make him be the Iraqi sympathizer.
I'm glad they didn't, because that would have been horrible.
Guess you figure, you know, if that was the original plan and then all of a sudden you got Sergeant Slaughter available, well, that was more heat than anything.
Well, I actually got to speak to two people. One, I got to speak to Conrad Thompson from Woo Nation. He's a great guest. And Conrad and I talked about, you know, a lot of the stuff that's going on with Ric Flair. And I actually got to meet and talk to Sergeant Slaughter. And Sergeant Slaughter told me two stories. He told me one crazy one about that Vince McMahon called him up and said that you know, his house was being threatened, his wife was being threatened. They were making threats and stuff.
Oh, that was legit. He was being threatened left and right.
And then they also asked him to burn an American flag, and he said no.
Right, and he said on the Hogan T-shirt. They burned the Hogan T-shirt instead, and that still ended up causing huge controversy because there was an issue with somebody trying to burn something in their house.
Wow, that's a good one, Mike. Man, you know you won our prize for tonight. Did you know what the prize is? It's one of Bay Ragney's personal meatball sandwiches signed by him and Nick Wilkinson. Bay's going to deliver it to you.
Oh, cool.
So you need to go on Bay Ragney's page and tell him that you won the meatball sandwich. And I even mentioned it on his page, and you want your sandwich.
Hey,
matter of fact,
I am going on
Bay's page right now and announcing you as the winner.
I want a pizza from DeFarris. from the big weenie. From the big weenie. Hey, but my favorite WrestleMania was WrestleMania 5, the Mega Powers explode.
That one was awesome. That the build up for that was just awesome. And I don't know how we completely didn't get around to talking about that one, but the promos from Savage leading up to that were so good. And the doctor footage.
It was either going to be my number one or not, and it was like a toss up between what I picked as number one.
Right.
But I'm glad you mentioned it, Mike, because I did not make my list. Not because it wasn't. I just, like I said, I just had more better memories.
Sure.
So I wanted to go with that. But, Mike, hey, man, we appreciate you calling in. And, give your show a plug. Go ahead.
Well, you know what?
We don't plug anybody anymore.
Yeah, we do. We plug everybody. We just do it in our own unique way. But I was going to say, before you get into the plug in the show, give us your thoughts on Sunday's big event.
Well, I'll tell you two things. Number one, tomorrow, please everybody be listening to the Mojo Sports Show. Mojo is going to have me on as a guest. We're going to talk WrestleMania, and I'm going to give my predictions. And Mojo is actually going to be giving prizes away. He's going to be giving wrestling prizes away, I heard. So that should be cool.
Okay.
We're
going to
break down WrestleMania. And I'll tell you this. The match I'm looking forward to the most is I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with Roman Reigns and Triple H. I think that they're trying to stuff Roman Reigns down people's throats, and it's just not working.
I said it earlier in the week. I think that's going to be more disappointing than Superman versus Batman.
I don't know. I think, you know, smart towns, quote-unquote smart towns, give Roman Reigns a hard time. But he's over in a lot of buildings. He is over in a lot of buildings.
It's not that he's not over. He just... He falls flat. He just... whereas Rollins had something, Reigns, when he gets out there, has nothing to me. And it might be just me. You know, I'm not saying that... You know, I'm not trying to push my opinion on anybody. It's just... He literally bores me to tears.
Right. Well, see, I like Reigns' in-the-ring work. I think he shows good intensity, especially if you go back and watch the deal with the Shield and Evolution. They really, all three of those Shield guys really stepped up and showed me something that, and I thought Reigns had it. My thing about Reigns is they gave Rollins a lot of protection and a lot of build. He got to sit literally under the learning tree with Triple H for a year and become this great heel. Roman Reigns to me he's like Brock Lesnar in a lot of ways. He's a big, beefy guy, and he's really intense, and he does good, decent work in the ring, but he needs to be guided because every time he opens his mouth, he makes me want to punch my television set. And that's what I think the biggest issue is with Roman Reigns. I know you don't like his work, right? But I think in the ring, he does a good job. He does some really intense stuff. He's very explosive in the ring. I've not seen him have a bad match.
I've seen him have a million bad promos. It's okay. It's more his. He just doesn't. There's nothing. It's just flat. Man, he just gets out there and it's just like, okay, yeah, Superman punch, yay, spear, okay, and yeah, he's intense, but at the same point, he's the new Bobby Lashley.
Well, and that's where they made a mistake with Lashley, too, is they built him as a babyface with no one to speak for him. If Lashley had been a heel early on and just destroying guys like they did with Brock Lesnar, Lesnar was in the same situation as a Bobby Lashley and a Roman Reigns. They both were big, strong guys. They both were very explosive in the ring, but they couldn't communicate with you in a way, verbally or non-verbally, in a way that made you believe in them. And that's the problem with Roman Reigns. He looks Like, perfect example is last year at the Royal Rumble, or 2 years ago at the Royal Rumble when he won.
I was there.
Right, and he comes out after the promo with The Rock. He had the rub from the freaking Rock, and, you know, he goes in there, and they're doing a promo in the back, and he's talking with The Rock, and he's like, yeah, I got to go to the doctor and get my lips looked at. And I'm thinking, you did not just say that. You did not just say that you're going to the doctor to get your lips. You should have been plastering that injury all over and how it didn't bother you, and you're ready to go kick somebody's butt. But he's all trying to be like, oh, and I hurt myself in this match. And, you know, he just doesn't emote. And I still believe that Roman Reigns could be a marketable. And you know what I would do tomorrow? I would go crazy. And this is why they will never let me book. You know what I would do tomorrow? Turn him.
I would too. I would too.
Hey, by the way, you know who I think Bobby Lashley reminds me of the most? Ahmed Johnson.
Yes. He just had...
right? He just had that look, that look to him. Ahmed Johnson, you know, to me was... Ahmed Johnson to me was
too.
Just a stiff. He was just a stiff, though. I mean, he really... I mean, out of him and Farouk, I mean... And Ron Simmons, and they've wrestled so many times. I watched them so many times. That's basically, and him and Goldust had a little bit of a feud with the Intercontinental Championship and stuff. But
right.
I don't know. To me, with Roman Reigns, I like his work, but why can't we just get him out of the? I guess they broke him out of coming down to the ring. I think he's kind of used the entrance way now, and
right.
I think they might be changing his look. But let me ask you guys something. You guys are real deal wrestling fans, right?
Right. Well, before you get on to the next thing, what you just touched on is a big part of why I think people are tired of Reigns too. When the Shield broke up, two of the three of them got makeovers.
Right.
And Reigns didn't. He kept the same coming through the crowd entrance, the same music, the same gear, essentially. And that definitely did not help his case. So in that case, you're absolutely right. And hopefully they do change him up enough to make him interesting and something different, because he's still doing the Shield gimmick, even though the Shield's been gone for 2 years.
Right.
Actually,
it wasn't moving on. It was staying right in here. I'm saying you guys are wrestling fans from way back. Say you guys turn on your TV, right, and you watch Monday Night Raw, and it's Austin, and he comes out, right? And Austin's a face. He comes out, and McMahon's standing in the ring, and people are cheering for McMahon. What the hell do you do? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? What do you do?
Right.
It's like almost with John Cena, same scenario. John Cena can face a murderer, and people will still cheer the murderer.
That's not true at all. Cena gets the crowd. If you watch a Cena, and this
they
is the
hate
thing,
him.
So many people, they don't. They really don't. If you watch Cena, he comes out, and he gets the boos when he comes out. And he gets, of course, I'm not talking about your Philadelphia and your Chicago crowds, because they're the exception to the rule. But when you watch Cena get booed, he literally spins that crowd on his head the whole time he's out there. He gets booed because they want to be cool. And then the minute he starts talking, they get behind him. The minute he comes out, by the end of the match, every time, they're cheering him again. They're on with him. They get him. They get into his matches. They get into what he does. The whole Cena thing is a ruse, and they're never going to turn Cena, because while everybody, quote-unquote, hates Cena, for the last 15 years, John Cena has made the most money for the company in merchandising.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So,
and also his Make-A-Wish foundations as well.
Right. And the fact that whether they're jumping up, they don't really it's cool to boo the good guy. It's cool to be the anti-hero. And John Cena doesn't, in general, even that's why things, you know, that's why you see the good guys with the Edge are the most popular guys. It's cool to boo the straight arrow. The principal is the bad guy because he represents law and order. Cena's the good guy. He's a clean-cut guy. He does the right things, and he's not hip because he's not, you know, a degenerate. He's not a cousin curse. He doesn't do this, and it's cool to do. But when you watch, if you literally break down and watch 95% of the time, by the time John Cena leaves the ring, they're cheering for him, even though they give him a heck of a time when he comes out, and that's simply because it's the cool thing to do.
And that's awesome, man. That's a good point. I have no problem with Cena. I remember when Cena first started. I remember when Cena was a heel. I remember when Cena won the title. I like Cena. Actually, one of his biggest matches to me was when he defeated the Big Show at Madison Square Garden, WrestleMania 20. And then the following year, he wins the title. And it's like, Cena, here we go. But I got to tell you that I want to plug my show for Sunday night because it is a WrestleMania theme. Right after WrestleMania, on this network, I will have a post show like you've never seen. I'm gonna have a panel, and everybody's welcome to call on the show and talk to me about WrestleMania. I'm gonna have the Handyman with me. I'm gonna have the Black Sinister from the X Clan is gonna be with me, and I'm gonna have a surprise that's gonna be with me. I might even have a wrestler from WrestleMania, one of the WrestleManias.
Wow! See, you get
I might.
Yeah, but you get the prime stuff. You must be like the show on the network because Bay gives you the post. He gave you the post Rumble show. He don't give us anything. He wants to move us to Sundays at 2 a.m. So you got to be the guy, man.
No, I'm not the guy. Here's what happened. I went to Bay and I asked him if I can do a post show. That's how it happened when I first got on the network. I asked him, I said, hey, do you think it's possible if I could do a Royal Rumble show? He said, yes. Then I said, do you think it's possible I get to do this show? He said, absolutely. And then I asked him, and he said, absolutely. And I'm not the number one guy. I'm just a dedicated guy. I eat, sleep. This is my life.
Well, listen, I went up to Bay and I said, hey, can Maverick and I do a post show? You know what his response was? Wait a minute,
what?
You guys are still on the air?
Yeah, every week we're thinking we're getting canceled because, he keeps...
I got to tell you guys something. You guys are welcome to call my post show anytime. I'll have you guys on the air. You guys can stay on the air with me. That's cool, man.
If I call your post show, I'm only going to talk about posts. I'm going to talk about ring post, sign post.
I wonder if there's going to be any Maverick signs in the audience on Sunday.
There really needs to not be.
they started conversating Maverick signs after the first time they appeared at a WrestleMania.
I listen to your show. I listen to your show every week, and I fell in love with your show. I think your show is a great show. I think you guys do what I rarely do. I mean, I do talk past stuff. I do go into the past a lot of times, but you guys are the best, and just keep up the good work, and you'll get there. I mean, I'm not the best, but I'm coming along.
All right, my man. Well, Mike,
tomorrow, the Mojo Show. Oh, by the way, a tip for you guys. There's a button there. It's new to the station. It's a button.
Yeah, we didn't like it.
Our show. Right, and you didn't like it?
No, we didn't like it.
You know who?
Too long.
I knew that because I was a good employee and paid attention, and Frank had no idea, and I still can't get my own show.
Hey, guys, anytime you guys need me to work the board for you, just let me know. I'm always available to help you guys out. But I got to just tell you one more thing, and then I'm leaving. Tomorrow, Mojo Show, 10 a.m., I'm going to be on there probably about 12 o'clock talking WrestleMania. We're going to do our picks and stuff, so it should be fun. So it is pro wrestling now with Mike Ferrara, and I thank you guys as always. And hit me up on Facebook, Maverick, or Frank anytime. Call my show anytime. You guys are welcome. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Did you catch the undercurrent there? He kind of stooged on us. We called him up. We're like, what's your WrestleMania picks? He's like, I'm going to be on a better show than yours and give them the name. You're giving stuff away. We're giving away meatballs and nobody wants them.
Well, no, he gladly accepted the sandwich.
He was going to take the sandwich. We're just kidding with you, Mike. Don't get upset. We know it's all in business, man.
Make sure that Bay gives it to you. And it's got to be signed by him and Nick.
In ketchup.
Yeah, and I've messed around with that end-of-show plugs thing. I can't fast-forward it to ours.
We just wanted to plug ours.
Yeah. Why am I going to? I'm not. I refuse. We are rebels. We're loners.
It's why you'll be joining us on our new time slot, Sundays at 2 a.m.
For the Maverick and Zombie Show. That's right. But we never got to my number one, so I'm going to do it real quick.
Yeah, what was your number one? You're going to be slow.
You're getting tired. You got a big day tomorrow.
I do. I got to chase.
You're going to be a dancing queen.
That's me. I am going to be in the new production of ABBA's Dancing Queen.
That's right. You heard it here first. Along with Randy Mulkey.
Coming to the Totally Driven. Mulkey Mania.
Well, my number one is the number one. Because
did he
for
think
me,
he got a big weenie?
Wait. He was talking about the big weenie Castanini show.
Oh, okay.
No. Mike started talking about a big weenie. I would have hit the X button.
That's where Randy Savage came from earlier. And The Rock. All right, number one. We're trailing off.
Number one is number one. Because I'll never forget it. It was magic to me. I couldn't wait for the videotape to come out.
How long did you have to wait for that? Did you go up to the video store like everybody else and try to get it? How long did you have to wait to get that? I had to wait for months before I could actually sit down and watch it.
Well, the video store in Collingdale, you know, he got it to rent.
Right.
And I had begged him to be the first on the list. And I was literally, because remember it was where Texas place used to be.
Yeah.
And Texas Burgers, that place was good. I missed that place.
They
but
really had some good food for a while.
He got it, and I begged him. I was like, please, let me be the first. Literally, the morning he was able to put it out, I grabbed it, ran home, and watched it. And to me, nothing will ever beat that main event. Because when Mr. T got in the ring and actually knew some wrestling moves,
he was legit.
Killed. Yeah. When he body slammed Piper, and you were just like, yes! Because it was, you know, Hulk Hogan and your hero, Mr. He was everybody's hero. He was the A-Team. He was Mr. T.
Oh,
he was D.A. Baracus. He was D.C. Cab.
Yeah, he was so big then. It was a big. I was like, these guys, I thought like Hogan was going to be a regular on the A-Team from now on. I thought these guys were going to be like the tag team forever. I mean, it's crazy. Like when watching the promos, you're like, this is the greatest team ever.
Weren't you hoping they were going to make a run at the tag straps?
Oh, I did. I thought Mr. T was in for the long haul. I thought these guys were going to be, you know, teaming up, and I thought they were going to be doing television together because they had appeared so many. They really, and Hogan, you know, kind of revealed that he was kind of Mr. T's babysitter, and that's why he had to go everywhere with him. And he was really difficult to deal with. But, they were such a, the workout videos together and the Saturday Night Live appearance and the A-Team and everything leading up to it. I mean, one was so big, and I had to wait months. I went to the video store in Fulcroft where I grew up, and I had to wait, I think, 2-3 months before I actually got to see.
Well, that's because no one went to Fulcroft.
Well, yeah. Well, no, because the sign-up sheet was – and for everyone, every year, until – I don't think I got to see a WrestleMania live until maybe 9. It was that far in, maybe? We had a toga party. It was kind of nuts. We had a toga party for 9 because that's how much of a fanatic I was. We had a toga party because they had the toga party. Remember 9, the toga party, when Keenan was backwards on the camel?
Yes. was Norman a sheet?
Was what?
Was Norman a sheet?
Norman was in a probably, yeah. I'm sure he was there.
Please tell me you have pictures.
May,
if you have pictures, have been, we will post them on the LAW site.
It may have been pre. I don't know if these pictures of this exist. It may have been pre-Barfly, but there was definitely some togas going on. And it was huge. But, yeah, the first one, I had literally had read the results, and they've already, you know, Paul Orndorff had been a full-fledged babyface at this point by the time, you know, I got to actually watch all the matches. I remember watching the matches, and I'm thinking, you know, when it starts off, and it started off with Tito Santana and Buddy Rose. Well, what was Buddy Rose's gimmick? He's like the Executioner. Right, and I remember thinking, what the hell is this? This isn't WrestleMania. And Bruno and Junior against Johnny Jr. Beefcake. Yeah, Bruno Jr. was against Beefcake, but Bruno was there. Bruno was on the show, and, you know, it was a decent card. Santana and, we already said that Santana, it was Junkyard Dog and Johnny and Greg Valentine.
Yep.
For the Intercontinental belt. Yeah. She can Volkoff in the U.S. Express.
So that was my number one.
Yeah, that's an awesome number one because it is the beginning of it all. It really changed a lot. There was a, you know, I was one of them who was completely, like I told you, I watched every weekend. You know, we would put it on and watch it, and I thought it was cool and all, but it wasn't until Mania hit, and I saw this stuff with Mr. T, and Hulk Hogan literally was everywhere, and I became a big Hulkamaniac at the time, and I was just obsessed with everybody. It was insane. And and it was because of WrestleMania.
Well, here's to WrestleMania. I guess I'll see you Sunday.
Yeah, yes, sir. I will be over. I will be out of my Lancaster world, hopefully.
Hey,
finish
you
up and
you
get
and
home.
You and I in pay-per-views have become kind of a tradition at the Kringle Cave.
I know, yeah. We'll be chilling out. We'll get some food, and we'll watch some Mania, and we will not call Mike's show because he will hang up on us, but he always does.
Yeah.
I call his house every day, and he hangs up on me.
And a warning to the pizza shop, if you give us nubs again, I will berate you and eviscerate you on our nationally known radio program.
Yeah, right? They dropped the ball on the wings last time, man.
Nubs. I hate nubs. That's why I stopped going to Not Just Wings. That's right, I said it. Not Just Wings serve me nubs.
Got to put some meat on them. We got to get some good wings going. If I'm going to be up all night with gallbladder pain, it's going to be worth it.
Unfortunately, the good wing place isn't open on Sundays. Only during football season.
Hmm.
But on that note, I guess we'll, we're going to plug us. We'll be on next week, hopefully.
We hope. We hope we'll be on
and,
next week.
And we'll plug Nick Wilkinson because we love Nick Wilkinson. He's on Sunday nights with the...
He's the only guy who listens to us. Oh, and Mike. We'll plug Mike. Although for Mike, plug Mike.
Mike's on like every day, so just turn into the network and Mike will be on.
Yeah,
and,
it's literally becoming the Mike Ferrara network.
And we almost forgot. Bay Ragney and his wonderful meatball sandwiches are on Thursday nights. That's the flagship show, which he's got like a ton of guests lined up in the next couple weeks. So you people want to listen to that. But on that note, we're going to get some rest here because it's getting late. It's past our bedtimes. And I'm going to let my partner give his usual snappy goodbye.
A snappy goodbye. Happy trails, folks.
See ya.